This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, this is Jim Nunn with your Enquirer Sports on a Saturday, the 27th day of April, and we've got all sorts of information we're going to try and get to, from Bengals to Reds to whatever. But first, as is our habit, let's take a look at what's on the air as in TV radio. We start off with, let's see, FIA Formula E, wow, World Championships, today at 12 noon on CBS, that's under auto racing. NASCAR Xfinity Series, the Bet Rivers 200, 1:30 this afternoon on Fox Sports 1. Final listing for auto racing has Monster Energy Supercross, 3 o'clock on NBC. Golf, PGA, the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. That's an Zurich, okay, whatever. 12:45 on the Golf Channel. Then we go to LIV Golf League, and that's 1 o'clock on CW. PGA Champions, the Mitsubishi Electric Classic, 2:45 on the Golf Channel. Then we go 3 o'clock, the PGA Zurich Classic of New Orleans jumps to CBS. Like I said, that's 3 o'clock. 6 o'clock tonight has the LPGA, the JM Eagle LA Championship, and that's on the Golf Channel. Final listing under golf has DP World Tour, the ISPS Honda Championship, 10:30 p.m. Golf Channel. One listing for horse racing, and that is America's Day at the Races, 2 o'clock today on Fox Sports 2. How about a little baseball? We'll try and get to it, but the Reds sadly took a loss last night, 2-1. I'll try and see if I can find the details on that. But anyway, so today the Reds try again, 4:05 at Texas, against Texas, obviously, on Fox and 700 AM radio. More Major League Baseball has Houston at Colorado, 6 o'clock tonight on the MLB Network. Final listing has Arizona at Seattle, 9:30 p.m., Fox Sports 1. NBA, Eastern Conference, Western Conference, we're getting into the playoffs. So here we go, 1 o'clock today, NBA, Cleveland at Orlando on TNT. Western Conference playoffs, Oklahoma City at New Orleans, 3:30 p.m. on TNT. Eastern Conference playoffs, Boston at Miami, that is at 6 p.m. on, you guessed it, TNT. Final listing has Western Conference playoffs, Denver at Los Angeles, 8:30 ABC. NFL football, the draft. For those of you that are really into the NFL, day 3 of the draft, and that starts at noon on ABC, ESPN, and the NFL Network. How about NHL? We have conference playoffs here too. Eastern Conference playoff has Carolina at the New York Islanders, 2 o'clock today, TBS. Eastern Conference playoffs and the NHL has Florida at Tampa Bay, 5 o'clock, TBS. Stay on TBS because the Eastern Conference playoffs with Boston at Toronto is at 8 tonight. And final listing has Western Conference, Dallas at Vegas, 10:30 p.m., TBS. Men's soccer. Okay, how about English Premier League, Brentford at Everton, 12:30 noon, NBC. MLS has the LA Galaxy at Austin FC, 1:30 on Fox. Colorado at FC Cincinnati, 7:30 tonight, Apple TV and 15:30 AM radio. Let's see. Well, the only thing listed under golf was the Madrid Open, and it's on the Golf Channel, but it was at 5 a.m. this morning, so I know what I was doing then, and hopefully you were sleeping too. So, how about UFL? As in football, Birmingham at Houston, 7 tonight on Fox, and that seems to be about it for TV radio now, as is our habit. Like I said, let's go to upcoming events. We've only got 2 listings here. We've got FC Cincinnati plays today versus Colorado, 7:30 p.m. Their next match is May 4th versus Orlando at 7:30 p.m. And then May 11th versus Columbus, 7:45 p.m. Cincinnati Redlegs at Texas today. First pitch is 4:05. Tomorrow, they finish the 3-game series at Texas. 2:35 is first pitch. And then April 29th, they are at San Diego at 9:40 p.m. playing a little baseball. So that's it for upcoming events as well as TV radio. Now let's take a plunge into what we can find in today's edition of the Cincinnati Inquirer Sports. And we've got at the top of the page what to know about Amarius Mims, a new Bengal. Let's take a read on what they've got to say about the Cincinnati Bengals drafted tackle Amarius Mims out of Georgia with the number 18 pick in the NFL draft. Mims is a 6'8", 340-pound tackle, was one of the best offensive tackles available at the time the Bengals were on the clock. Mims is widely praised for his physical traits and how they project in the NFL. It was one of the main reasons why the Bengals selected him. It's rare when you see him, it looks like he could add weight. I don't know how, head coach Zach Taylor said of Mims. He's a rare-sized athlete, and we are fortunate to get him. By selecting Mims, the Bengals continue to fortify their offensive line and get a quality player at a position of need. Protecting Joe Burrow remains the team's biggest priority year after year. The Bengals were also looking to find a long-term solution at right tackle after four seasons of starting a new player. With Mims, Cincinnati is banking on the development he will get sitting behind veteran Trent Brown, who was signed in free agency and will start at right tackle this season. The two main knocks from draft pundits on Mims are his lack of starting experience and his durability. Mims started only 8 games at Georgia as a right tackle. The Bengals felt his reps in those 8 starts show enough of who he is as a prospect. In fact, Pitcher said he thinks Mims' limited starts at the college level is the only reason he fell down to the Bengals at pick number 18. I think we're all of the opinion that the only reason he's here for us to pick at number 18 is probably because of the fact he only has 8 starts, and had he played this whole season in the way that he played in the tape that we saw, there's a very low chance that we'd even have an opportunity to pick him, Pitcher said of Mims. The Cochran, Georgia native had a tightrope surgery, ouch, on his ankle in the early part of Georgia's season last year that forced him to miss 6 games. In a conference call with the local media in Cincinnati, Mims said the ankle injury is far behind him. During his time in Athens, Georgia, where he was on a team that played in the best conference at the collegiate level, competing for a national championship each year, Mims went up against one of the best defensive lines in college football on a daily basis. This was something that was attractive to the Bengals brass. He knows what to expect when he gets it to the NFL, Taylor said. Mims said he is thrilled to be joining the Bengals for several reasons. He felt his pre-draft visit in Cincinnati went well, mainly due to his conversation with Taylor. There's also the idea of blocking for Burrow, something he said he's thought about for a long time, dating back to when Burrow played at LSU, another SEC school. Man, I'd love to block for that guy, Mims said of what he thought when he watched Burrow win a national championship in college. Amarius Mims' scouting report, it says, stepped into the starting lineup for the first time in the 2022 college football playoff against Ohio State in the Peach Bowl and TCU in the CFP championship game. Was in a tackle rotation that season with eventual first-round draft pick Broderick Jones and fifth-round pick Warren McClendon, starting only 8 games total after needing a tightrope surgery for a high ankle sprain and being limited to 6 starts in the 23 season, but looked the part of a first-round draft pick when he was playing. All right, let's see. One other thing it lists here, it's not much, is highlights. Did not allow a sack and gave up just 6 quarterback pressures, wow, and 376 career pass blocks, according to Pro Football Focus. Well, there you have it with the Bengals' number 1 draft pick, and they did, what was it, 2nd and 3rd round last night. I don't think that's anywhere in this edition, but we'll see what we can find as we progress through. So here we go. Thursday's game, Phillies 5, Reds 0. On Thursday, Philadelphia Phillies ace Zach Wheeler gave the Reds lineup 1 chance to get back in the game. Wheeler, one of the best pitchers in baseball, allowed just 1 hit in 6 shutout innings at Great American Ballpark. The Reds had their only big opportunity against him in the 3rd inning when they loaded the bases with 2 walks and a single, But a fly ball from Spencer Steer was caught at the warning track in right field, and Wheeler led the Phillies to a 5-0 victory over the Reds. Reds starting pitcher Nick Martinez, who allowed 5 runs and 11 hits in 6 innings, pitched with runners on base for most of the game. Aside from a 4-run third inning by the Phillies, Martinez escaped one jam after another, but a 2-run home run by Phillies first baseman Bryce Harper, playing his first game in the series after being away on paternity leave, turned out to be the big hit that broke the game wide open. All right, well, I think we get the point there. So how about our other front page story, which is FC Cincinnati points in right direction. Let's see what they've got to say. The idea of a matchup with Colorado Rapids probably doesn't strike fear in the average Major League Soccer fan yet, but it probably should. After finishing first in the Western Conference in 2021, the Rapids tumbled down the MLS standings with just 16 wins over the next 2 years. In 2023, the Rapids won just 5 times, and in a complete reversal of their 2021 success, finished last in the West. But new life was breathed into the Rapids organization this past offseason. Chris Armas, a former New York Red Bulls head coach who had a stint as Manchester United FC assistant coach in the interim, was appointed the manager. The club also made splashes in the transfer market. Jordi Milavega, the former Chicago Fire product who went abroad to continue his career, arrived in Colorado. So did Sam Vines, who arrived from Royal Antwerp FC of the Belgian Pro League. Perhaps most notable at the time was the acquisition of now former Columbus Crew and Manchester City FC goalkeeper Zach Steffen. The U.S. men's national team player came to Colorado on a free transfer. As ever, the end product of all Colorado's offseason work has so far yielded varying results on the individual level. Collectively, though, the Rapids have been formidable early in this season, posting the same 4-2-3 record and 15-point haul that FC Cincinnati has. That makes the meeting between Colorado and Cincinnati today at TQL Stadium, 7:30 p.m., one of the week's more intriguing matchups in Major League Soccer. FCC, now an established power in the league as the defending Supporters Shield's winners, hosts a renewed upstart Rapids side looking to make another strong early season statement. I think Chris has done a very good job with the group early on, FC Cincinnati head coach Pat Noonan said during a Thursday interview. There's new faces, not always easy getting everybody on the same page early on, but a strong start, especially, you know, in the last 4 games, and I think in just watching the games and looking at them a little bit closer defensively, I think they continue to get better. Organized, they do a good job of staying compact in different ways of going to the ball in different areas of the field, but organized. And then with the ball, there's been a balance of the ball on the ground, the ball, you know, direct. I think in the moments that it goes direct, it's because they have a willing number 9 in Rafael Navarro that challenges, uses his body well. Mihailovic, the way he operates underneath and gets on the ball, he reads plays well, obviously a very smart player. And then the last few games with Kevin Cabral and Calvin Harris, primarily as the wingers, two guys with pace that know how to stretch the game, that gave them an option to threaten behind, So they're effective with the direct play, but they also have players that can move the ball on the ground, so being able to deal with both of those things, I think, will be important for us. It's a good challenge, but there's certainly a team moving in a positive direction. It says Colorado is unbeaten in its last 4 matches. They are 3-0-1 with the lone draw coming against Eastern Conference leading Inter-Miami CF. FC Cincinnati used a second-half comeback to down Atlanta United 2-1 at Mercedes-Benz Stadium last weekend. The victory snapped a 2-match losing skid but was quickly overshadowed before the weekend ended because of the acquisition of forward Kevin Kelsey from Ukrainian top-flight side Shakhtar Donetsk. Kelsey is awaiting confirmation of his P1 visa, though so for all the headlines, his arrival garnered he won't play for Cincinnati yet. FCC is making most of its progress results-wise on the road, where it has posted a 3-1-1 record. after winning 13 matches at TQL Stadium last year and losing just twice, and one of those games was a dead rubber match after Cincinnati clinched the supporters' shield and had nothing further to achieve in the standings. The 1-1-2 record so far in 2024 has fallen short of the fortress standard that was set last year. We know we have not been, I would say, good enough at home, Noonan said. We were very consistent in results last year, and I think we were also consistent in performances, and that hasn't been the case early on. You know, you can make a lot of excuses, but why early on with being a part of a championship, Champions Cup? But the reality is we had strong groups out on the field, and I think enough recovery to be better than we were. Okay, well, so that's a little bit of the what's going on with FC Cincinnati. Well, now we are off the front page and moving forward. And here we go with a little bit of Bengals update on the NFL draft. So we'll just see what this has to say. The Cincinnati Bengals entered the 2024 NFL draft on April 25th with 10 picks over the three-day draft. Day two saw the Bengals address some needs. They took Michigan defensive tackle Chris Jenkins with pick number 49, and the national champion Wolverine could fill the void left by DJ Reader's exit in free agency. In the third round, they selected Alabama wide receiver Jermaine Burton with the number 80 pick. The speedster should offer a vertical threat for a team in need of explosive plays. They swung back to defense at picks number 97 to take Texas A&M defensive tackle McKinley Jackson. That was much earlier than Jackson's draft projections, but Cincinnati wanted to double down after failing to address the position enough in free agency. On Thursday, the Bengals made Georgia offensive tackle Amarius Mims their first pick with the number 18 selection. At 6'7", 340 pounds, Mims fits the mold of a giant offensive tackle the Bengals have preferred. He's raw with limited starts at Georgia, but won't necessarily have to make an immediate impact with Orlando Brown Jr. at left tackle and newly signed veteran Trent Brown on the right side. Cincinnati hopes Mims can protect quarterback Joe Burrow for years to come. The Bengals came into the draft with priorities at defensive tackle, offensive tackle, and wide receiver, as well as depth pieces at interior offensive line and a wild card of cornerback always on the table. After back-to-back middling draft classes, bills coming due at quarterback and receiver, plus 10 picks with potential to add more, this becomes a foundational draft to determine the team's long-term sustainability. Protecting Burrow is always a priority, and Mims will be expected to fill that need. The Bengals have Super Bowl hopes, and this season with Higgins seems like an all-in effort to achieve that goal. This draft has the potential to fill some needs and add depth to bolster their chances. Keep coming back here throughout the draft. That's something I pulled off, obviously, for this article. So that's the scoop, and they get it. Let's see. If you're into this kind of stuff, how about we got Paul Denner's Jr.'s analysis. Mims is not as far along fundamentally, especially in the run game, as other tackles in the class, but he is a natural in pass protection with above-average length footwork and body, twitch to handle different types of edge rushers. So there is projection involved with his draft grade. His best football is ahead of him, and he has the talent to become a long-term starter at left or right tackle. Well, the Bengals certainly hope so. And then it goes on to say round two. I'm going to give you the analysis paralysis here. How Chris Jenkins, defensive tackle, how he fits. I think this guy's pretty good, too. He ought to be. The Bengals were in desperate need of help stopping the run. DJ Reader left for Detroit. Sheldon Rankins is more of a pass-rushing acquisition. The fact Jenkins was available at 49 was an ideal fit for the fabric of this team and coordinator Lou Anarumo's defense. The two-time captain brings elite character leadership, NFL bloodlines, is the son and nephew of former pros and among the freakiest athletic traits in the draft. He ranked in the 99th percentile for run-stop percentage. Okay, and so it says, analysis, Jenkins might never be a high-production interior player, but he is light on his feet and heavy with his hands with the do-my-job mentality that NFL defensive coordinators appreciate. He projects as an NFL starter as a one-gapping tackle on the interior or two-gapping strong-side defensive end. That goes on to say, the next guy, round three, number 80, Jermaine Burton, wide receiver of Alabama. How he fits. One of the more improved receivers in this class over the last two seasons. Burton blossomed into a big-time ball tracker in the air who made a ton of big plays with Jaylen Milroe and Bryce Young. Burton didn't have the type of college career people expected. He transferred from Georgia to Alabama early on, but finished better than he started and has room to grow if he maintains that track. Okay. Burton, it also says Burton underperformed in college and still has maturing to do, but he has NFL-level athleticism and ball skills, which make him worth the gamble on draft weekend. He will be a better pro than a college player if he stays football-focused, it says. Okay, and then let's see. We move on. Number 97, compensatory draft pick. That was McKinley Jackson, defensive tackle, Texas A&M. The Bengals have made it abundantly clear they plan to bulk up in the trenches in this draft. By adding Texas A&M's McKinley Jackson, Cincinnati has added a defensive tackle who will eat up space and spell the starters for a few years. Jackson is 6'1 and a half inch, so 6'1 and a half, 326 pounds, was projected as a sixth rounder, so this is a reach, but he might help keep the starters fresh for a series each half. Jackson has a desirable nose tackle body type with his arm length, low center, and raw power, but his disjointed hand usage and positional instincts are concerns for his next level transition. He is a candidate to provide depth as a shade in a 4-3 front. Okay, and then let's see, more analysis. The biggest error plan that went awry for the Bengals during free agency was failing to accomplish what they wanted at defensive tackle. They used two of their first four picks to right that wrong. Second round pick Chris Jenkins is the versatile rotational piece as a run stopper in the middle. McKinley Jackson would be the new Josh Tapu, big body, nose tackle, run stopper. The Bengals took Jackson earlier than his draft projection because they could not afford to miss at this spot. Doing so for one of the few big bodies who could do the job in their mind is paying the price for free agency. All right, there you go. That's a little bit on the Bengals, right? How about we switch sports and go to the PGA Tour? McIlroy and Lowry make 11 birdies at Zurich. Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry are enjoying the first taste of the Big Easy. The friends and former Ryder Cup teammates are tied for the lead after one round of the Zurich Classic of New Orleans on Thursday. So in other words, this is an older article, but that's the way it goes. After hitting Bourbon Street for a steak dinner before the tournament, McIlroy and Lowry shot an 11 under 61 in Thursday's four-ball best ball action, racking up 11 birdies without a bogey. It was a stellar showing from Ulsterman and Irishman, who have five major titles between them in their Zurich debuts. "We're staying downtown. We ventured out a couple of times," McIlroy said. "Yeah, it's a cool city. Great food scene. I thought the crowds out there today and the support that we've got was amazing. Looking forward to more of that over the next 3 days." McIlroy and Lowry ripped off four straight birdies and route to a 6-under 30 on the front nine, then came home 5-under 31. They are tied with the teams of Ryan Bramman, Mark Hubbard, Ben Coles, and Patton Kazari, and on there. "I definitely felt today I was less hard on myself than I've been in the last few weeks when I hit a couple of bad shots," Lowry said. "It's nice to know you've got Rory McIlroy backing you up. But yeah, I definitely feel like there's a nice vibe out there with the two of us. We know each other's games so well. We played a lot of golf. We played play a lot of golf at home together, and we just know each other so well." Well, that's a nice upbeat kind of article, right? Even though, like I said, it's a little old. But how about tennis? Nadal seeding for French Open not being considered. Let's see, out of Paris, former world number one Rafael Nadal is unlikely to be seated at next month's French Open, Roland Garros tournament director Amélie Mossamol said on Thursday. On Wednesday, the Spaniard said he was not sure if he would be able to play at this year's French Open, which he has won a record 14 times. 37-year-old Nadal, a 22 times Grand Slam champion, has plummeted to 512 in the rankings after a long spell on the sidelines, having missed almost a year with a hip flexor injury. He has entered in the main draw for the French Open thanks to his protected ranking, but that ranking does not apply for seeding, with the 32 highest-ranked players being seeded. With no seeding, Nadal could be drawn against top players in the early rounds of the tournament. Until 2020, Wimbledon was the only one of the four Grand Slams that did not stick to the ATP and WTA rankings, opting instead to also factor in players' past performances on the grass. Wimbledon's seeding formula was criticized by players, including Nadal, before it was abandoned. Asked about Nadal being seeded at this year's French Open, Maurice Hummel told reporters, "Right now, it's not a topic. Wimbledon did it for a very, very, very long time, and it certainly brought some advantages, but we also saw all the disadvantages it could bring. For the moment, it's not on the table. We are keeping our fingers crossed for him, above all for us too, obviously. We're keeping a close eye on what's happening for him on court. We're in touch with his team. Whether they're a tribute depends very much on him. We'll follow the wishes." All right, in closing, we've got a little bit of a note about last night's game, the Reds game, Rangers 2, Reds 1. Marcus Semien hit a go-ahead solo home run in the bottom of the eighth to lead Texas over visiting Cincinnati. Semien, who flew out to the wall in dead center in his previous at-bat, smashed a 1-1 fastball from Cincinnati reliever Lucas Sims 392 feet down the left field line and off the front of the second deck for his fifth home run of the season. Evan Carter also homered and had two hits, and Leody Taveras had a double and two hits for Texas, which won for just the third time in its last seven games. Jose Leclerc, 2-2, pitched a 1-2-3 eighth to pick up the win in relief, and Kirby Yates struck out two of his three batters he faced in the ninth to earn his fourth save. The Rangers' bullpen did not allow a base runner over the final three innings. Starter Nathan Eovaldi went six innings and allowed one run on three hits, walking five and striking out eight. Jonathan India had two hits, and Eli De La Cruz had two walks, two stolen bases, and a run scored for Cincinnati, which suffered its second straight loss. All right, that's it, sports fans. That's all the time we've got for today. Cincinnati Inquirer Sport, this is Jim Nunn wishing you a delightful sports weekend. Thank you.